So there's this really deep, subtle desire that runs through me that makes no cognitive sense whatsoever. None. Like the people it wants to kiss, the places it wants to go, the things it wants to do make no sense to me. And so what I did was I just developed a relationship with it. And I said, okay, you lead. And then it would say, okay, great, guess what we're gonna do? We're gonna do this. And I would be like, you are out of your mind. We're not doing that. I remember, you know, all of a sudden it said I was gonna move to this crazy orgasm ranch. And I was like, that's just dumb. Like, hello, I am a business owner. You know, and then it was kind of like, well, hey, you want me to lead? I make you feel better than that. If you let me lead, we're going this way. It was like, okay. Right? That's it. And when you let that subtle desire direct you, and then when you keep investing your attention and your awareness in that, rather than this fear, and it's really hard. It's like my attention wants to cling so desperately to my fear, like it's this pole in my center, and I'm always safe if I'm clinging to it. But if I just let my attention be drawn away into that desire, which just feels so floaty and weird and uncomfortable, if I let it be drawn there, it keeps guiding me again and again to the next deep, beautiful, soft place that makes less and less sense. I mean, my life makes less and less sense as I go, but it feels better and better. And what begins to happen is now there's a whole pool of energy in my desire bank, you know, so that I feel a lot more grounded in it. And so now when I stand in my desire, other people can stand in my desire with me. And I can comfortably stand in other people's desire. And that's when you really begin to explore freedom, right? It's when two people can stand firmly in their desire and then nurture it for each other, share resources. That's when you have real friendship and real freedom, when like that deeper desire that wants to come out can be expressed in the world, when we can have that kind of intimacy with ourselves, with our lives, with our feelings. I mean, because it's so weird. I mean, aren't your desires really weird? They aren't like, I don't know, they weren't the prescription I was given. Yeah, the things that my body and my psyche want to do just don't necessarily seem right. And then all of a sudden, though, there I am, you know, and I'm licking somebody's arch. And it's like, yeah, this is as good as it gets right here. So I think a good meditation is to begin to examine, and I know I kind of pointed you out, but this was actually going to be the topic of the lecture, so you gave it to me beautifully, thank you. To begin to examine the environment that you're creating for the world to give you that which you most deeply desire. How, if you were the world, right, and the world were you, how would you feel about the way you're asking for what you want? I mean, how often do we say, I want this? You know, that moment where it's just so tender being that exposed in the face of your desire. There's this beautiful story of, you know, Krishna falls in the dirt. And when Krishna falls in the dirt, there's dirt in his mouth, and his mother rushes over and starts to wipe the dirt away and sees the entire universe through his mouth. And then she passes out and dies, whatever. And you know, there's stories like this in Judaism, there's stories like this in every religion, the moment of seeing God and not having a consciousness that can withstand it, right? The same is true with our desire. You know, those moments when you know what I mean? When you just flash on, that's what I want. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, I can't have that. It would never work. They wouldn't want me. I've failed at everything I've ever done, blah, 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 blah. And how many layers we put on top of this very, very fragile, innocent desire. You know, it's not going to come get you. The true ones don't come get you. The true ones you have to, like, make sure that you hold the door open for. And then they'll come. They want to come, but you have to hold the door because they're so fragile. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's my request that we just try, maybe over the course of this week, playing with this idea that the world wants to say yes. What is the environment that I have to create for it to do that and for the world to feel received by me?
I'm a little confused when you say, what's the environment I have to create to have the world receive?
Like, for example, one of the elements of the environment of this body that I have to create for the world to feel received is I have to remember. That's a big one. Like, I make a request on Saturday. I don't get it by Saturday evening, and I'm pissed. And then, you know, on comes the desire on Tuesday, and I'm like, oh, it is too late. Like that. That's one of the things that I might do, is be willing to give it a few minutes to actually materialize for me. But I'm constantly looking for proof that the world doesn't want to give me what I want. So if it's not there, I am out of there. That's one. And then another one is to be willing to, like, sit in my own frailty as I release my desire. I mean, one of the things that I think I have to do is, it's like, you know, I want to go on retreat. I'll just use, like, I want to go on retreat. And I'll be like, I want to go on retreat. 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 You know, and it's like, okay, we got it. You know, they're like, we're putting your order in. Thank you very much. And I feel the need to just keep repeating it to the universe so that it doesn't forget, right? There's a little bit of faith that I have in this body in order to actually receive it. Because the more I'm putting the request out, you know, the less this subtle desire can come into my body and be received. And one of the reasons why I keep putting it out, one of the reasons why I have so much agency in the world, is because of how fragile I feel when I'm not acting, when I'm not controlling, when I'm not telling the world what to do. There's just this fragility of, what if I don't get it? You know, and then really, like, sitting with that feeling. And then there's a certain amount of heartache that I feel. And then underneath that, even more humbling, is there's a certain amount of admission that I have to make about how often I've asked for things that I didn't receive, or that I didn't receive graciously. Or that I, you know, like, for example, when I did this whole inventory on my heartbreak, you know, I think I might have created every single one of my heartbreaks. Like, and I think I might have worked really, really hard to create them. Like, I think I created some heartbreaks with people who didn't want to break my heart at all. I mean, I had this amazing story. It was one of the most compelling heartbreak stories. Whew, I could get anybody crying in a room. You know, and I was talking to my teacher about it, and she was like, he followed you to Hawaii? I was like, yeah. He paid for every course you ever took? Yeah, but, you know. He came back to you 4 times after you broke up with him? Yeah, but, you know, I just had, and she just actually listened to my story for about 6 months, and pretty soon it didn't make any sense, you know? And she stole my heartbreak. And then the worst thing was, I had to call him and say, I'm sorry. Right? Yeah. So there's a whole level of agency that we have to address when we confront our desire. And then, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of responsibility to get to know what you really want. One of the things that my teacher says that I love is, well, it doesn't sound that brilliant here, but it sounds really brilliant when she says it to me, is, you know, everybody wants a baby, but nobody wants a teenager. And so there's this way. Everybody wants a baby, but nobody wants a teenager. And so there's a way that I can walk through the world and be like, I want that and that and that and that and that. But I don't see, you know, if I'm going to keep these things for life, the trajectory of what it takes to have that, right? Like with Reese is like, you know, what do you want, man? And so I'll be like, and I want an urban retreat center, and I want a center in New York, and I want Stinson Retreat Center, and I want these things. And then I'll be like, I'm tired of New York. Let's close it. Because I want another center in LA. So there's a certain level of responsibility that, you know, when I'm drunk on my desire, I have short-sightedness. And so I've learned to treat all of my desires like children. Like, okay, I'm going to have this one for life. Do I really want it? And there's a way, in, you know, we began yesterday when we were talking about the scarcity mind, has us looking at, like, getting whatever we can as fast as we can, right? So I'm like, oh, I have an opportunity to have it. I better have it right now. There's and then what ends up happening is you have this pile up of stuff inside of you, so that you end up sort of like when I first moved here, I had a girlfriend, and I went to school, and I would walk to school, and I would walk to school through the Mission District, and we were broke, and. But somehow, you know, I had like my $5 a day allowance. Now, rather than save my $5 a day, I would go to the dollar store and get five things every single day so that I could gratify that desire itch, right? I couldn't sit with the sensation of desire for a long enough period to gather enough currency to buy something I really wanted. I had to, you know, fill my house with the things you fill your house with from the dollar store. And so, like, to actually sit with the vulnerability of my desire long enough to know what I really want. And then when you know, you know. That feeling, to wait until that clunk happens. Like when Ken and I lived together, and where we lived, one of the things they would say is like, don't have intercourse until it's irresistible. Don't have intercourse until it's irresistible. And most of the men who moved into that place were like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I'm going to be crass now. There's pussy available. What are you talking about? And so they you know, and like the people who live there would be like, really, don't have intercourse until it's irresistible. And so these guys would go in and they would just, and they would get everything they could get. And then like the women were done with them. But the guys who waited until it was irresistible became a commodity, right? Because they would wait until until my desire was like so built up, I was like, give it to me. And so every time I looked at them, you know, there was this reinforcement schedule of seeing them with that much desire. That's all I saw of them, right? And these other guys, So I would say that with your desire. You can afford to let that desire build up in your body. Okay, that's the higher level practice. I'm going to give you a practical level practice as well. And that is, try every desire out that arises. So the first I'm talking about is big D desire. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about little D desire. And I'm going to say that most of us are so out of relationship with our desire that we have a hard time even admitting we want to go to dinner tonight at a nice restaurant. I mean, like, even that is distant, right? So like those big deep desires, total awakening for all humankind. Right, are like way over there, like, I just want to have an organic meal. You know, like to actually like come into relationship with that. So my suggestion is always, whatever you desire is right. You have absolute and complete permission to desire whatever you desire. And gently move toward it. Just allow yourself to gently move toward it, to feel all of the stuff that comes up, to get in relationship with that vulnerability again, to step out of the compensatory life, you know, to step out of this life that we've created to make up for the fact that we're never going to have what we want. I'll have every now and then a little bit of joy to break up the monotony of emptiness, right? Like, to begin to like step into, hey, I think I want those earrings. Just to touch it, and then to say yes. Small things too, or like, you know, today I think I want to go to the park. You know, today I think I want someone to touch me. You know, these are, usually those are the nature of the desires that we're saying no to. They're these little things, like I just want you to touch me. I just want to be felt as a human being. I just want to be acknowledged. And then to be, like, I love how you said, like, just to open that door, that floodgate, to be willing to say, like, this is it. This is what I desire. And then, for me, like, what I do is I say to my desire, you are more important than any result. Like, the joy for me is just being in relationship with my desire, so it tells me what it wants, and I go out and try and do what I can to have it have that. But the joy is in being in relationship with my desire, not getting the things. Does that make sense? So it's like I'm always sexing with my desire. Who cares if I actually get the earrings? That's not true about Stinson. But then what begins to happen is, if you're always sexing with your desire, then pretty soon people feel that sexing happening, and they want to be part of that feeling. Pretty soon it can feel so good to give you what you want, because you now have the surplus from the joy that you're experiencing with your desire. You now have the surplus to express gratitude. And one of the amazing things I've discovered in all of these years of teaching is how deeply we all want to please each other. How deeply we just want the simple experience of knowing that we have touched another human being's life in a pleasurable way. And how vulnerable it is when I let you touch me, right, to say thank you. That feels good. For some reason, we've been taught to be so one up with each other that actually expressing gratitude means I'm weak. I don't understand what that is. I really don't. But it's part of human nature. And it's something that can profoundly shift, something that profoundly shifted my life. Was just learning not to, like, it was funny, you know, I actually learned to say thank you. I was with these crazy theosophists, and I learned the word thank you in this really profound way. And so they'd be like, hi. I'd be like, thank you. Do you want some soup? Thank you. Everything was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. And finally, one of my teachers was like, Nicole, I don't even understand why you're always saying thank you. It's kind of weird. And so I actually had to learn how to say thank you appropriately. And then I had to learn how to say thank you just by acknowledging, and not acknowledging by thank you very much for the lovely scarf that you bought me, but actually letting somebody feel the joy they had given me. It didn't even have to be in language. It just had to be to let them feel how deeply they had touched me or moved me. I had to be that vulnerable. That's the only payment for your pleasure. This is one of the things that I want out in the world. The only payment for our pleasure is our pleasure. If I allow myself to feel what's given to me, that's payment enough. Because I'll naturally emanate it back out into the world, and those around me will feel better. I mean, everything that I do up here, this is just because people have given me so much. So it took a lot of attention, a lot of attention, to move me from, you know, I don't know how far I moved, but to move from where I moved to where I'm at took a lot of love, a lot of explaining, a lot of attention, a lot of belief. And so it's just natural to sit up here and like wanna love you and wanna share some of like all of this that was poured inside of me. And I think that's the natural way that it's supposed to work. But there's these ideas that get in the way. And one of the ideas is that you have to earn your pleasure. And you don't. Starting today, you have done enough work to earn your pleasure. You've done enough work to earn your pleasure. If you never worked another day, if you never did anything to prove yourself ever, ever, ever again, you still deserve a life filled with pleasure.